Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
The whole idea of had to get married is completely not even part of our vernacular anymore. It's just gone from our language.
Yeah, but I think the interesting part is the laws haven't really caught up to the social trend.
This is definitely true in a lot of ways.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is who's your daddy? Bet you didn't know that unmarried dads have no rights and other paternity issues. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So recently we had a listener who reached out to us. She has two children and lives with the father of her children, but she's not married to him. And she wanted us to consider doing an episode regarding the legal issues around children with unmarried parents and what happens if that relationship ends. So that's what we're going to be covering today. And the statistics are quite large. It's actually that 40% of all children in the United States today are born to unmarried mothers. And actually more than 70% of African-American children are born to unwed mothers. So this is a large proportion of the people who are having children today. And I think Rebecca and I have both seen a huge increase in the numbers of parties who come to us who are not seeking a divorce, but who are seeking help once they've broken up on dealing with the issues around parenting their children and support. So there, you know, as I looked into this, there appear to be two main factors contributing to the trend. The first one is the one that seems to drive everything in this world, money. And there's either a perception or a truth that it's less expensive to cohabit than it is to marry. One of the stories I was reading said something about, you know, avoiding the cost of the big expensive wedding and going through all of that was one of the reasons why we see a lot of millennials today not going through marriage, but just cohabiting. And I think the other thing that strongly contributes to this is that in today's society, we really don't see the taboo that you might have seen in the past about children being born out of wedlock, so to speak, or born to parents who aren't married. So I think you're seeing it quite a bit more often. It just doesn't have that negative connotation anymore. You know, I was thinking about it. In fact, you know, one good example of it is we have four Kardashian sisters who have children, and only one, Kim, is married. The other three all have children out of wedlock, and I don't think in today's society that's something that's particularly shocking. So, you know, the other thing that I think we do see is that cohabitation relationships statistically end with a greater preponderance of the time than a marital relationship. I read a statistic that said about 85% of cohabitation relationships end within 5 years. So in those relationships that end and there are children, there are a number of issues that legal issues that need to be dealt with. So Rebecca, maybe you could cover some of the legal issues that those parents face.
Yeah, I just was going to mention something about what you were talking about. And that is, we were talking before we got on this show here about how when we were kids, we used to hear about people who had to get married. And that was like a big taboo, you know, clearly, let's see, you know, that so-and-so's birthday is only 6 months after the anniversary, so her parents must have had to get married or
you know. The shotgun wedding.
The shotgun wedding. And if somebody, you know, got pregnant as a teen, then they had to get married. And if they didn't get married, then, you know, the child would be born out of wedlock. And there was a lot of stigma around that. I remember my grandmother pulling me aside one time when I was in high school, because I had talked about that I had met this girl that, you know, lived in the town that she lived in. And she pulled me aside and she said, "That girl had a child out of wedlock." And like, basically, I wasn't supposed to consort with such things. And, you know, nowadays, that kind of conversation doesn't even take place. The whole idea of had to get married is completely not even part of our vernacular anymore. It's just gone from our language.
Yeah, but I think the interesting part is the laws haven't really caught up to the social trend.
This is definitely true in a lot of ways, not just this, but you know, there's quite a few areas that I would say. But I would say that the main areas that any parents face, whether it's a separation or a divorce or a paternity action, they're the same. And that is that you have to create a parenting plan. The old days, it would be called custody. But in the new day, we don't use the word custody anymore, but a lot of people understand that word. They've heard that word, but it's basically, what are you going to do about seeing your kids and when? And then the second area would be child support. And in every state, virtually all 50 states, there's a guideline for child support. There are different ways that the guideline is calculated. There's different ways that it's applied. There's different things that go into the guidelines in each state, but every state does have a guideline, and income will be a factor in that guideline depending on, you know, in every state. And in certain states, the parenting plan will clearly impact the guideline as well, not in every state. But those are the two main areas, parenting plans and child support. And the thing is that the parenting plan is a lot more easily discernible and easy to figure out if the parents were married when the child was born, because there's a presumption that the husband is the dad. And that's a really, really strong presumption, meaning from a legal perspective that the court starts off, I always say the judge sits down at the bench with the idea that I'm going to presume that husband is dad, and you're going to have to prove to me why husband isn't dad. That's what a presumption is for the listeners. I know Susan knows. That's what a presumption is. And so dad is going to be presumed to be husband and vice versa. If the mother gives birth to a child and there's no husband involved at all, then it's a whole lot more complicated, because even if she throws dad's name on the birth certificate, it's not really going to do a whole heck of a lot. And people are very, very surprised to hear that. But many times the dad actually has no rights, zero, if he's not married to mom at the time the child is born. Right. I think that's surprising.
Oh, I think that's, you know, the number one surprise is I've had dads come to me after a breakup or even, well, still in the relationship, but knowing that there might be some problems in the relationship and wondering what their rights are with their children. And they're absolutely shocked to find that if they were not married to mom at the time the children were born, and if they have not been to court, then they have no rights. They have no ability, because that same presumption that you're talking about does not apply just because they say they're the father. I think the difference between an unmarried parent or father and a married father is that the law has a presumption that a married father is the father, and the law has no such presumption about an unmarried father. The burden is on the unmarried father to go to court, file an action, and prove, and there are a lot of different ways to do that, but prove that he's the father. And then from that, then dad, once he's adjudicated or determined by a judge to be the father, then dad has rights. Then dad has basically the same rights that a married dad has. He has a right to joint or legal, you know, custody, as those things apply to parents, parenting time with his children, and he'll also have an obligation to support his children. But the difference, I think, is a fine one for our listeners to understand, is that the unmarried father has no presumption of being a parent. He has to actually go to court and prove it.
Yeah, and that the way that plays itself out can be a nightmare. So I had a case one time where the dad was living with the girlfriend. They had a child together. When the child was about 6 months old, he came home from work. There was a note on the front door saying, "I took the baby and I left for Connecticut. And have a nice life." And so he freaks out. He wants his child back. He loves his son. He comes to me and says, "Get my son back." And I had to say, the first thing we have to do is file an action for paternity and get you to be determined by the judge to be the dad before I can do anything.
Right.
And so, you know, the best I can do is get her ordered back here just to submit the child for a paternity test, which is what we ended up doing. And right. So, you know, she had to come back to do the paternity test because, of course, she initially says, "Oh, he's not the real dad." So the paternity test came back as 99.9% or something that this guy was the father. So, okay, now we have that. Now we can say, all right, judge, go ahead and enter an order or a final judgment saying this guy is actually the dad. And now we can start talking about parenting plans and child support. Like, you can't even get to that place until the father is determined by the court to be the dad.
Right.
Now, you know, they could, you could agree that, you know, the mother could sign off and say, "I acknowledge this guy is the dad," and then you file it with the court and it becomes a final judgment of paternity.
Right. I think, but they would have to file a stipulation or something with the court. But
correct.
I think it's important for people to understand, you don't just walk into a courthouse with a written stipulation or something that you've drafted up saying, "I agree that Bob is the father of Billy Ray," and just don't drop that at a clerk's office or run to the, you know, a courtroom and the judge is going to sign it. You still have to file an action. You call
correct.
It a paternity action.
Something has to be open. You have to have an open case.
I always term it, you need a vehicle to get into a courtroom, and that's correct. Your action. So it's either the paternity action in some states. Other states call it a parentage action to establish who the parents are. You know, a woman doesn't have the same problem, right? This is why there's such an issue around paternity, is because a mother gives birth, her biological parentage is known right from the very beginning. But the father's parentage cannot be established without external evidence. And
correct.
The number one method is the paternity test that you referenced, Rebecca. But there's also, I've had cases where, based purely upon mom and dad's testimony about dad's relations with mom and the timing, et cetera, that a court has determined, based upon the credibility of the parties, the father is adjudicated the legal father. But going back to, you know, what you were just talking about, that even if mom and dad agree, they need to get something filed with the court, and that will require, at least in today's legal world, until something changes, you know, legally, it requires filing an action with the court and getting something in front of a judge. Or dad just doesn't have the protection of being the legal father of his own children.
Yeah, and I should add on to what you just said, that in certain states, you're not going to even just be able to file this acknowledgement of paternity, you know, even if you open the case and file the acknowledgement, because the state's going to want to rear their little head into it and say, well, what about child support? They're not just going to go, okay, you can be the dad. Great. Sign off on it. They're going to say, well, what are you paying in child support? Who's paying for what? Because the judges have a duty to protect the state from children becoming wards of the state. They don't want children to have to be supported by the state. They don't want them to end up on welfare or whatever. So they may step in and say, I'm not even signing off on this until you guys file financial affidavits and do a child support guidelines worksheet that gets filed. And I want to know who's paying what.
Yeah, there are actually many states, it's a requirement. A court cannot enter custodial orders without entering support orders as well.
Correct.
So that's often a big, you know, with the good, having your parental rights comes what some might term the bad, having the obligation to support your child until their majority, which varies by state, but is at a minimum 18 usually, and goes out to 21 or beyond in certain cases where you have children with special needs.
Yeah, because a lot of times the mothers will say, oh, I don't want the support. I just want him to sign off on his rights.
I want him to go away.
Sometimes the dads are like, great, I want to. But they're not going to be allowed to. So sometimes it's better for the dads in that case to stay anonymous and not be adjudicated as the father. But if dad wants to see his kid or his kids, then he's going to be adjudicated. In order to be adjudicated as the father, he's also going to be probably looking at a support order, depending on what the incomes are of each of the parties. I mean, not necessarily. Maybe he gets child support. It, you know, really just depends on what the incomes are of the parties.
Right. Well, and once an unmarried father is adjudicated to be the legal father, you could even have, as we've talked about in our episode about busting myths, dads sometimes have the children with them primarily living with them, and dads receive child support in those instances all the time. But dad cannot, even if in an unmarried situation you had a stay-at-home dad, the stay-at-home dad has no rights, just as a traditional, you know, father would have if he was not married to the mom. Every unmarried father has to go to court and establish their rights. Now, this is in a case where you have a mom who's not cooperating in a breakup situation.
But even if she is cooperating, as we said before, you have to file, even if it's a stipulated petition for paternity or stipulated complaint or whatever the terminology is in your particular state. But it could be a stipulated complaint or stipulated petition, and then it would be a stipulated final judgment. But there are documents that would need to be filed. And by the way, Ms. Clerk or Mr. Clerk wants his filing fee for the privilege of that. And so whatever the filing fee is in your state, which is, you know, a few hundred dollars probably at least. I know in Florida it's, you know, 400 and something. And, you know, so I would imagine it ranges anywhere from a few hundred dollars to more than a few hundred dollars for the complaint. Yeah. But you're going to have to pay a filing fee for sure, unless you can prove yourself to be indigent and exempt from a filing fee. But
that's a whole separate process.
It's a whole separate thing.
Court situations. But yeah, I mean, there's that. And sometimes there's a service fee. Sometimes you have to have that paperwork served on the other parent, notifying them of a court date. And so it's an unfortunate thing that there needs to be this long drawn out process to this. None of this happens quickly, just as any court procedure doesn't happen quickly. But, you know, we should say when the parents, married or unmarried, work together, come to an agreement, it certainly works much more quickly than if they're planning on going to court and let a judge make all of these determinations.
Coming up, more from Susan and Rebecca on Who's Your Daddy? Bet You Didn't Know That Unmarried Dads Have No Rights, and other paternity issues.
I think that it's always a huge shock for dads that are not married to the mothers of their children to find out that they don't even get to any of what we've just spent a couple of minutes talking about here until they can prove that they are the fathers of their children.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including moms automatically get the kids and other divorce myths busted.
Now, we should distinguish. There is another myth that's kind of closely related to this. And that is that if I go to court, that the judge is going to see everything bad about the other person and agree with me. You know, I always have this vision that the people are going to think, I'm going to get into the courtroom and the heavens are going to open up and the judge is going to go, oh my gosh, you poor thing. How have you been living like this? Okay, he or she should definitely walk naked in the streets with everyone yelling shame. And I, you know, you should have it all.
Yeah, shame.
And let me give you 100% of his paycheck and all of the assets. And can I give you more? Did you know that Americans spend more than 90% of their time indoors and that in some cases, indoor air can actually be more polluted than outdoor air? And that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths across the world every year? Airborne allergens are the most common allergy triggers, such as pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold. We are so happy to introduce an air purifier that captured the attention of established media outlets such as CNN, Money, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens so that your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor is amazing and it comes with no questions asked, 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. So head to airdoctor.com and use the promo code YOURBESTLIFE. And depending on the model, you'll receive up to 40% off. You're saving up to 40% off. Lock in this special offer by going to AIRDOCTORPRO.com and use the promo code YOURBESTLIFE.
And now, return to today's show.
Paternity actions or parentage actions can get dragged out and as long as a divorce, even though you're not dealing with, say, property division and some of the other things you're dealing with in a divorce, you do still have the parentage issue, the paternity issue that has to be adjudicated. And then beyond that, the court goes to those two main issues, right, Rebecca, of what's in the children's best interests and what is everyone's income and what are the correct inputs to calculate the child support. And that can be hotly litigated, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that children's stuff, custody issues are more expensive than anything else. I mean, property issues can get long and be expensive as well. But at some point, the numbers are what the numbers are. When you get into best interests issues with the child, it's all fact-driven, witness-driven. You know, you could parade in 35 people to say whatever they want to say.
Right. Expert witness driven.
Or there can be an expert witness who does some sort of a custody evaluation. But if you don't have an expert forensic, somebody who's doing an evaluation, then all those people that forensic person would interview to write a report would have to separately be paraded into the courtroom and have them testify. And judges don't have hours on end, days on end to hear all these people, nor do they want to, nor do most people have the money to pay for that kind of time, because you're talking about paying for two lawyers
at least.
And then, you know, your expert, whoever that is. So, I mean, it's usually a little bit less expensive to hire a forensic psychologist to do some sort of an evaluation, but they're not cheap either.
Thousands.
So,
They're thousands of dollars. It's not a $500 thing to have a friend.
Oh, no, no. I mean, $5,000 is probably the minimum.
At a minimum.
Minimum.
And timely. I mean, they are time consuming. A custody evaluation is months, not
months.
Weeks.
So. It's months because they have to, I mean, or they can be doing testing on each of the parents. They can do different types of parenting evaluations, psychological evaluations, substance abuse evaluations. I mean, there's endless different types of personality tests that they could give. But on top of all of that, they're now also going to be interviewing the parents individually at least two or three times. They're going to be observing exchanges between the parents and with the children. They're going to be interviewing what we call collateral witnesses, which are whoever the parents want you
think
to interview.
Important. Yeah.
Yes. You know, which is whoever, grandparents, teachers, soccer coaches, all the people involved with the children's lives, the principal of the school, you know, oh yes, I saw him over here volunteering several times a week or whatever it was, and I never saw him hit the child, you know, things like that. They may even interview the children alone.
Yeah.
If they think that that's necessary. So setting up all of those different interviews and administering all of those tests and then writing a report, which is usually like 30, 40, 50 pages sometimes, because they usually have to go through all of the statutory factors, is extremely expensive and time consuming. So,
you know, so that's...
Yeah. Kind of goes back to what you said last time, Susan, about, you know, well, I'll just go to court.
Yeah. I'll just go to court. I'll say my piece. The judge will agree with me and I'll walk out with everything I wanted. That's a fairy tale. And we shouldn't laugh because sadly, as we talked about in our other episode, that is a common misconception. But I think that also, when it comes to custodial issues, that can be a common misconception. But, you know, going back to just the main theme of today, I think that it's always a huge shock for dads that are not married to the mothers of their children to find out that they don't even get to any of what we've just spent a couple of minutes talking about here until they can prove that they are the fathers of their children. And that just, you know, I had a case where a client came in and said, well, I signed all that paperwork at the time of the baby's birth. I was there. I've been the one taking care of the baby. She goes to work every day. And he was certain that by signing that paperwork at the hospital, that meant that the court papers had been taken care of. He had legal papers. And he was quite upset to find out that the acknowledgement of paternity that he signed at the time of the hospital of the birth had, I mean, it's a step toward establishing paternity, but it does not, it's not what you and I are talking about by going to court and establishing your paternity through an action with the court. It's an element of evidence that can be brought in, but it's really, that document is something that goes more to what you were just talking about with the state having an interest in knowing who the father is because the state wants the father to contribute to the support of the child. That, you know, people really need to become educated in this time of having children without the legal, you know, benefit of marriage, just because that does provide that presumption that the father is the husband. But Rebecca, have you seen cases where the presumption has run up against the fact that the father is not the husband, but the woman is married?
I have. I've had a couple of different versions of that, actually. I had one situation where the husband was willing to just relinquish his rights. He knew the kid wasn't his. And then, you know, so he relinquished his rights at the same time that the real dad took on the rights and everybody signed off on all the stipulations and it worked out just fine. I've had other situations where the husband was you know, he was the real, I mean, the dad as far as the law was concerned, but not the biological father. And the biological father wanted to be involved. But in Florida, there was no way that the biological father could have any rights whatsoever if the husband wasn't willing to relinquish that. I mean, he was out of luck.
So is that based on that presumption we were talking about earlier?
That was based on that presumption. Now, in Florida, just 2 months ago, maybe, there was a big case that came down. It was, you know, really kind of a landmark case because it was the first time an appellate court said, you know what, this is really kind of stupid. I think that we should, you know, the guy whose DNA is proving that he's the dad, he should be able to have some rights here. And so this is just what we're seeing is the laws catching up with what's happening in society today.
Yeah, I think that that's actually a pretty shocking result where that presumption is so strong that the husband of a married woman who has a child is the father would completely obliterate the actual father's rights. But I had a case, it wasn't even that long ago when I was in Connecticut, where my client was the mom and, or she was the wife actually in a divorce, and the parties had been living apart for 2 years. My client actually lived in New Hampshire, but we were processing the divorce through Connecticut because the husband lived there. It was very amicable. They had been apart, hadn't even seen each other for about 2 years. And then she showed up for the uncontested hearing in Connecticut and she got out of the car and she was 8 months pregnant.
Oh.
And none of us knew. I was her attorney. I did not know that she was pregnant. Certainly her husband did not know. And when we walked into the courtroom, I saw the judge's eyebrows go up. And I knew we were in for it because the judge would not. She got on the stand and we tried. She testified that, and the husband also testified, that they had not been in a situation where it was physiologically possible for him to have been the father.
And she was having some fun.
Yeah. And the father offered to come in and testify as well, the actual biological father. But the judge at that time would not enter final orders because there were no orders regarding the unborn baby in the judgment that we had provided because we had not negotiated anything about it. So we had to actually continue that hearing until after the baby was born. Mom went and got a paternity test and we brought that into court and submitted it. And at that time, there was no problem getting the judgment entered. But I still remember seeing her step out of that car out in front of the courthouse and thinking,
someone's busy.
Yeah,
busy girl.
Not going to go as we thought.
Interesting.
So, but those paternity tests really is what it comes down to. I mean, there are many. I mentioned earlier that sometimes the testimony, like we tried in this case, can do it. But ultimately, the paternity test, when there is a contested issue regarding paternity, that's the gold standard for proving paternity.
Well, and I had a case one time, I just remembered this as you were talking about that case, that my client was the husband and the case dragged on so long that he had already had another girlfriend and everything. And I'll never forget, he said, you and I should go to lunch because I just want to talk to you about some stuff with my case. I was like, oh, okay. So we go to lunch and he says, I just wanted to let you know that my girlfriend's pregnant. And so he's still married to the wife. So it's not possible for him to get married to the girlfriend at that point.
Well, that's an interesting one, right? Because it makes the negotiation a little bit different, right?
He just didn't want the wife to know.
Sometimes hard to let that be known at once you get far enough along.
Exactly. So, We're kind of coming up to the end of our time here. This is a topic that we would be able to talk about for a really long time. It's very, very complicated. But the main thing that we really want you to know is dads, you know, you don't automatically have rights if you're not married to the mom. That's the main thing that we really want everybody to take away from this. And moms, dads don't automatically have those rights. And so if you want him to pay child support or you want him to be on the hook for being in this kid's life, then both of you need to take steps to have dad be adjudicated as the father or get married before the child is born.
Right. Or even after. Because even after if the parties get married after the child is born, then if the marriage were to break down and the parties were to divorce, I've had that situation actually several times. And the children are still, at that time, the court has jurisdiction over those children, even because although they were born outside the time of the marriage, the court, again, it's that vehicle. There's a vehicle for the court to be determining and making decisions about these issues. But it is very important for both sides to understand that by going to court, hopefully with an agreement around these things, both sides benefit, both mother and father benefit, because father gets his legal rights as a father. Mother gets her legal rights if she's has the children with her to receive support and for the children to receive support, importantly. And bottom line, the children, you know, in almost all cases, their best interests are best served by having both of their parents in their lives.
No doubt about it.
I mean, that is a legal presumption in almost all states as we talk about presumption. So,
yeah. And by the way, I don't know if we actually said this out loud, but once dad is adjudicated as the dad, he has 100% of the exact same rights that mom does at that point. There's no higher ground going on once that happens.
Right. The law actually is caught up at that point. Once dad is legally the dad, dad is the dad for all intents and purposes, and there's no difference.
Yeah. Both parties have a constitutional right to be a parent to their children. And so it's just that step before that we're talking about. So obviously put your kids first, you know. Put the children's best interest first.
Yeah. And as in any case where you have children, it's always better to work together to figure out how you're going to co-parent your children, whether you are together with the other parent or whether you're living separately. You all benefit in almost every case, but most importantly, your children benefit by having both of you.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce Podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, a step-by-step divorce guide to achieving emotional, physical, and spiritual freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.